So there is a lot going on in all of these texts for today. Too many things to talk about in one sermon. So this morning, I would like to ponder Eldad and Medad from the reading from Numbers and this unnamed exorcist in Mark's gospel and what the response is to their actions. So today's gospel reading opens with John telling Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us." And I imagine that John was expecting Jesus to say, "Good work, John. We don't want just anyone going off and doing works of power in my name. Unlike you, he has not been properly trained." That's kind of a joke, everybody, okay? So that's what he's expecting, that Jesus is going to say, okay. But Jesus told John, "Don't stop him, for anyone who does deeds of power in my name will soon afterward not be able to speak evil of me." And similarly, in the reading from Numbers, Eldad and Medad were among those who got identified to go to the tent with Moses, but instead they stayed in the camp. And the Spirit rested on them, and they prophesied among the people in the camp. And a young man comes and reports this to Moses, and Joshua tells Moses, "Stop them." And Moses responds, "Are you jealous for my sake?" I can identify with John. I can identify with his narrow understanding of Jesus' ministry. I can identify with Joshua. When he asked Moses to stop Eldad and Medad, it reminds me of the adage, "A little knowledge can be dangerous." In both readings, it seems there is a concern that things would be done right. And by right, we mean the way we think things should be done. So what is it about our human nature that we feel a need to divide and separate ourselves from others? We have a tendency to fall into this dualistic either-or way of thinking and assessing ourselves over and against the people around us. So as I pondered these two stories, I found myself convicted. I confess that I also am guilty of this narrow either-or way of seeing situations and people. And so then I just asked myself, what am I going to do with that? There are countless opportunities all around us every day to fall into this simplistic, dualistic, either-or way of thinking in our society. I mean, think about it. Think about what's going on in the United States and all around the world, for that matter. It's easy to demonize those we don't agree with and to dehumanize those who find themselves excluded and ignored by society. Civil discourse, if we even know what that is anymore, it seems to have left the building, and that we have fallen into one of two patterns of communication. Either we avoid talking to or we attack those we disagree with on any given topic, as if there are only two ways of seeing any particular issue. And the only acceptable outcome is to win, to silence anyone who holds a different belief or understanding than we do. Think about any and all of these issues, what we call hot button issues that consume our attention and serve to incite feelings of anger and hostility. Statistics are used as weapons to drive our point of view home. And if you don't agree with us, then you are against us and we are against you. It becomes personal very quickly, and it results in deadlock. We are often trapped in this state of anger and frustration. Our words become our weapons, and we speak violence to each other and against each other. Neither side willing to budge, leaving us deadlocked in disagreement with no way to reconcile, to bridge the gap. When our focus is like a laser point, we lose sight of the broader horizon. I look out at you folks that are sitting here, and we also have the folks viewing online, and I know that there are topics that have the potential to bring about angry words and hostility. This is a tension that I find worrisome. And those of you sitting in the assembly and watching us online, I'm guessing that you know there are people who are part of this congregation that you feel have it all wrong. Folks you avoid talking with because you believe you cannot come to understand how this other person can possibly call themselves a Christian when their understanding is different from your own. I mean, pick a topic: immigration, guns, abortion, national security, healthcare, race, human rights, climate, even the Bible. This list goes on and on. So I want you to pay attention to the feelings that came up in you when I read this list off. Pay attention to your thoughts. Did you immediately think to yourself, here we go again, and then you load up both barrels of your verbal shotgun and you prepare for battle? Do you immediately think to yourself, what an idiot? Have you ever thought deeply and prayed about why you have this internal reaction that you do? And I'm not talking about statistics or knowledge. I'm asking you to think about your feelings, your reactions. Why do you have such a strong reaction? What is your motivation? Consider your internal dialogue and reclaim your ability to be self-aware. If we imagine John and Joshua and what their motivation may have been in that moment, it seems to me it's about wanting things to be done the right way. As followers of Christ, we must necessarily ask ourselves, where and when have I fallen into this way of understanding that actually blocks the work of the gospel? As you know, many of you know, I lived and worked among the Lakota people in Pine Ridge. I was there as a guest of them. And we hosted visiting teams who came to Pine Ridge to participate in a mission trip, and they came armed with their statistics. Statistics about poverty and alcoholism and drug abuse and violence. They came with feelings of anxiety, fear, anger, and sometimes hostility. Many of these folks had never been to a reservation. They had never spoken to someone who lives on the reservation, and yet they were very sure of what they know. And then they begin meeting people from the community, Lakota elders, local artists. We talked to Lakota staff that make up the Job Corps. We learned about Wounded Knee and this historical trauma that resulted from the massacre there. We visited businesses and discussed traditional Lakota culture. And as they heard the deeper story of their Lakota neighbors, you could just feel a shift away from this one-dimensional story that they were told through statistics. Let's be honest, statistics are safe. They keep the people behind those statistics at arm's length behind a sheet of paper. It clouds our ability to hear, to really listen to someone else's story. The thing is, when we get stuck in those surface stories, those one-dimensional stories, we give up our ability to come to a broader understanding. Once we begin to truly know each other and reclaim our ability to listen and hold more than one narrative, our understanding of truth expands. Okay, confirmation students, start listening for what you're going to write. So what does it mean to live in Christian community within the context of the broader society? As followers of Christ, we are called to nonviolence. We are called to care for the least and the lost. We are called to love our neighbors and our enemies. There's nothing easy about any of that, and we fall short. But nonetheless, we are still called by Christ to love. I know that all these hot button issues are important, and I am not asking you to compromise in your convictions. I'm asking you to consider compromising the way in which you communicate. As followers of Jesus, we must trust the Spirit of God to change someone else's heart and mind. It's not up to us. We can beat people over the head with our statistics, but at the end of the day, we have to trust the Spirit of God to change someone's heart and mind. And be prepared to have our heart changed as well. What is the right way to go about doing this? I honestly have no idea, but I do know that in my daily life, God is in the gray areas. God is in the messiness that is human relationship. And as difficult as it is to be unsure of not knowing the right way, that is what is required of us in order to hear and see a different way of understanding. If we can reject the notion that one way is right and one way is wrong, and just understand that they are different, then we can break the cycle of dualistic thinking that traps us in deadlock. It will require humility. I want to recall the words of Moses, "Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put the Spirit upon them." Imagine that world. So I have a few questions for you to ponder this morning. Do you have the courage and commitment needed to approach each other from a place of humility and humbleness? Can we claim our prophetic voices and use them in a way that reconciles us rather than divides us? Again, there is nothing easy or simple about any of that. But I believe with all my heart, that is what we are called to do in this time and in this place.